risky business. A little tangerine dream this morning.
Sure.
Yeah. Good afternoon. Good morning.
Good evening.
And all the ships at sea.
Oh boy.
It's 11 Uh-oh. Minutes past 9 o'clock. Yeah, it's been that kind of morning. How are you, Alan?
I'm doing just ducky.
Excellent. Quack, quack. Alan is with
quack,
us
quack.
Via what we call the tie line.
Yeah.
The undisclosed location.
The undisclosed location. And I don't know this. This is my ignorance. But is it T-I-E line? Is that what it is, Ray? Do you know you're an engineering type?
Well, it's tying it up, right? I don't know. it's tying the signal together. I don't really care.
Okay.
No, I can tell you. I can tell you because I'm looking right at it. It's tie line, one word. T-I-E-L-I-N-E. Check.
Excellent. There you go.
So,
okay.
Yes.
So we're official. Alan is with us. Ray Graff is with us. And our guest this morning, the always wonderful Daily Gazette editor, Judy Patrick, joins us. Good morning, Judy.
Hey, good morning.
Hey.
Thank you very much for coming in and doing this. We always appreciate you having you here.
And it's nice to be here. And the tie line sounds crystal clear.
Doesn't it?
It does. It's as if he's in the room.
I heard about this tie line, something you guys might be interested in, which is, or might not be.
Okay.
Which is that this very thing.
We get to judge.
This very thing that I'm talking on now, this tie line, is what brings you the entire Boston Symphony Orchestra.
Really?
Isn't that something?
That is something.
That is something. So you can do, one man can do what the entire Boston Symphony Orchestra has
exactly.
to do. That's how to look at it.
Get that banjo out.
Oh. Yeah, there you go.
That's right. Dvorak's third for banjo. Not.
By the way, the garbage truck just arrived and left, but it makes a lot of noise as it chews up the garbage, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's
so usually he usually gets here at exactly the time we start, but made an early appearance this morning.
Well, good. Excellent. We started yesterday by talking about the filibuster, which apparently we've been doing for the last 7 minutes, actually.
Filibuster.
So to update that story, we tell you that the Senate leaders reached an agreement on Tuesday to preserve the filibuster in exchange for confirmation votes on President Obama's stalled nominees, ending at least for now months of partisan warfare that threatened the stability of several federal agencies and a generation of procedural traditions. So, Alan, we ask you the question, is it a surprise that an agreement was reached?
Not really. I think nobody wanted it. I'm not so sure it was good for the rest of us, democracy being what it is, because it allowed a few people to hold things up. Well, when the Republicans were in charge, they wanted the so-called nuclear option, too. So if you weren't going to bring up their judges or whatever was happening, they wanted, an up and down vote. They were saying the same thing. They were going to do the nuclear option. That never happened. And here's the problem for the Democrats who are there now. They understand that Nate Silver just did a study in the New York Times, and you remember how good he was in the election, which says there's an absolute chance that the Senate will flip to the Republicans. And if it did, and now you made it easier to stop filibusters, that would put the Democrats at some great, and President Obama at some great disadvantage. So what they had to do was play fake out by looking at each other and saying, we're going to do it. And, of course, Harry Reid looked like he was going to do it, but just for the executive appointments, not for the judicial appointments. But, of course, once you set that precedent and the Republicans get control of the Senate, they say, hey, you did it for the executive appointments. We're going to do it if we have to, if a new president comes on board, for the judicial appointments. Is that clear as mud?
It is. Well, it is as clear as it can be. I think the New York Times perhaps said it best in the second paragraph of their article this morning, in which they say, quote, the deal which paved the way for votes on seven nominees was a classic Senate outcome, an inconclusive result that left both sides claiming some vindication. It was sealed with congratulations and awkward hugs among members who praised a private meeting Monday night attended by 98 senators for averting a parliamentary crisis. There is democracy in action.
You know, I think
the idea.
at the end of
the
day,
go Judy.
At the end of the day, I think it's bad for the Senate's approval ratings. One senator was quoted as saying, "I think this will be good. The public will have restored their faith in how the Senate operates." I don't think so. I think it showed just how badly it can function, and they really didn't reach a long-term agreement. This is going to continue. We're not going to get appointments quickly or effectively, and it slows down how government operates.
The other thing,
you are exactly right.
I loved when you say that.
Huh. Yeah.
But the idea of, so Joe said something before that really made me sick to my stomach. Huh. The idea of
it's not the first time of that. Yeah. No.
The idea of hugging Mitch McConnell, that did it for me.
Yeah, well.
So there were hugs all around.
Awkward hugs. So the immediate result was a confirmation in a vote of 66 to 34 of Richard Cordray as the first permanent director of the Consumer Financial Protection Board. So all of this nonsense, and then ultimately when the vote comes, it's not even really that close of a vote. Doesn't that mean something? Yeah. I mean, that in and of itself is odd. Yeah,
I couldn't agree more because we talk about democracy all the time, and as soon as you get the idea that the people's will by electing a legislature or a Senate, and by the way, even the Senate, as you know, I don't want to carry on because everybody knows a little something about the Great Compromise, and the rest of it knows that little Rhode Island has two United States senators. Vermont, which has one congressman, has two United States senators. So it's not really that much direct democracy.
Well, that's true.
And the states all theoretically would be equal in some measure, right? There's 50 of us and we're all buddies. Yeah.
What?
The Senate is there for a reason. The House of Representatives is there for a reason to reflect that.
Yeah, because we wouldn't have a republic otherwise.
Right.
The point is, the Senate.
You got to have two senators for each state. I don't get the point of that comment.
Okay, let me help you with this. Okay.
Yeah.
There was a tiny little state called Vermont. I love it. It's got the best politics I know. They get one because of the compromise. They get one congressman,
right.
One,
right,
and they get two senators,
right.
That ain't right.
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
It is the Constitution.
Right. It is the Constitution.
Oh, well, written by a bunch of rich white landowners. It is the Constitution. They knew what they were doing.
So are you proposing an amendment to eliminate the U.S. Senate?
I think he's proposing to get rid of the Constitution. I mean, that's what it sounds like to me.
Hey, I held up my hand at least five times in my life and said I'd protect the Constitution.
Okay.
How come nobody's saying anything?
Well, I'm just not clear.
I'm trying to figure out the five times.
Yeah, I'm just trying to clear.
Well, what?
Yeah, that's a good point,
too. One was in that congressional investigative committee. And,
I'm just trying to – we're just trying to clarify that because, I mean, obviously one is based on
– population.
On population. That would be the congressional representation. And Vermont and Rhode Island have very small – populations. Yeah. However, as Ray pointed out, as states in the union for Senate representation, each state would have two representatives, no matter what the size of the state. And some could argue that it's not fair that California or New York or Texas would only have two. Then, using that same logic,
that's my argument. You got it.
Okay.
You have a way of clarifying things.
I try.
Well, I understood your argument. Just thought it was not a good one.
And on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment and talk about other issues not filibuster related. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WMC comes from Harrington's Lumber, Millwork, and Building Supplies, offering cedar, EcoLife, Outback, AZEK, and Fibron decking, deck design, and delivery service. We share your passion. Harringtons.com. Cultural Pittsfield, supporting the Lift Every Voice Festival, celebrating African-American culture and heritage throughout the Berkshires. Through August 4th, liftevryvoice.org. Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology, surgery, and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery, veshdeerfield.com. And Utica College, offering a Master of Science degree in Healthcare Administration online, utica.edu.
They're dancing in the studio. I love it. It is welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue along with Ray Graff. Judy Patrick is with us, the Daily Gazette editor, and Alan Chartok joins us via tie line this morning. Good morning, Alan. We are back to talk about another story. We have a few moments before we go over to NPR News and talk about health plan costs for New Yorkers set to fall 50%. Front page story in the New York Times.
For those buying it, right?
That's right. Individuals buying health insurance on their own will see their premiums tumble next year in New York State as changes under the federal health care law take effect. State officials will announce this officially today. State insurance regulators say they have approved rates for 2014 that are at least 50% lower on average than those currently available in New York. Beginning in October, individuals in New York City who now pay $1,000 a month or more for coverage will be able to shop for health insurance as little as $308 monthly. With federal subsidies, the cost will be even lower. Supporters of the new health care law, the Affordable Care Act, credited the drop in rates to the online purchasing exchanges that the law created, which they say are spurring competition among insurers that are anticipating an influx of new customers. The law requires that an exchange be started in every state. We will not see that, though, will we, Alan?
It's very interesting because there are always kinks in all of this, and you have to wonder about, you know, who is going to get what the quality is going to be. I'm a huge fan of cutting down these prices. I think it's great, and I think that they have a right to brag about it. But you never know until it actually begins what will happen. And so, when I was having my back operation, let me give you an example. When I was having my back operation, I went down to one of the most important hospitals in New York City that works on this kind of stuff. And the guy went on about how the federal government wasn't treating the doctors fairly, the big shots. And this guy was one of the biggest in the country. And they weren't paying them what they should be paying them. I said, well, why don't you get out of the Medicare system? And he said, oh, I'd never do that to my patients. One day I got a telephone call saying the doctor can't do it because he's not accepting Medicare anymore. So these are the kinds of things. All doctors have to participate. Everybody has to go according to the rules. There'll be a certain amount of corruption that's involved in all of it. And the kinks will have to be worked out.
You know, and the rates they're talking about today are for people who buy their own insurance. The vast majority of New Yorkers
right.
do not buy their
do
own
not.
Insurance. So we're talking maybe
right.
as many as 600,000 people may be entitled to this kind of insurance.
Which doesn't...
And Judy...
No, go ahead, Alan.
No, I was just going to say, and you're quite right in pointing that out. Health insurance is a huge expense for most companies. I'm sure it is for the Gazette. It certainly is for WAMC. It's one of our largest expenses, and it's been going up and up and up. So let's see what it does for us.
Right, for those rates.
For those rates, and because we can then opt out and say, oh, well, this will be cheaper, so we'll go and do that instead.
Right. And, and another question is what these new rates, these new lower rates they're announcing today, what kind of benefits will they offer? Will they have high deductibles, which
yeah.
we're all kind of dealing with now? This Federal Health Care Reform Act is so complicated and it's going to develop over the next 2 years. It's something that everybody really needs to follow closely and pay a particular attention to the details.
And that seems to be one of the things that we're working this out now, that in some cases we're just discovering what the details are. And in other cases, we may not have known what the details were at all.
Right. Surprise, surprise.
Well, I think the same holds for Congress. I don't think, you know, they knew when they said, in the middle of the night, let's do this.
You know,
the
famous Nancy Pelosi line is, you know, well, we haven't quite read it yet, but when we do, I'm sure we'll be very happy.
Yeah, we'll sign it. We'll read it later.
Yeah, that is atrocious. Not to be opinionated, but it's atrocious that they didn't read it.
Yeah.
Study it, evaluate it.
And just assume that it'll all work out in the end. But even from the time that it was passed, from the time that it was held up by the Supreme Court to now where it's actually being implemented, we still don't have a clear, really clear picture as to what this is going to be and what effect it's going to have on people. And ultimately, which, you know, as it says by its very name and design, affordable. And will it be for companies and individuals throughout the country?
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that, Alan?
No. No, I pass.
Okay.
Give him a lifeline.
Sure. No, I.
Would you like to phone a friend?
One. Yeah.
No, but affordable and also high quality, good quality.
Of good quality. Right. And perhaps even of a quality, and this is arguable, obviously, but. Or at least a quality to what we are accustomed to now. Some could argue even what we have now of trouble. Yes.
Look, there's a philosophical question here. It really is. We know that the Republicans from the very beginning, they didn't like Hillary Clinton's health care package. They don't like Obama's. And we have heard it from the very beginning. They've talked again and again and again about how they object to it. Well, the philosophical point is this a country which wants to take care of everybody, or is this a country that wants to take everybody from the middle class up? That's the question. We can expect from the naysayers exactly what we've gotten all along. One of the things that I thought when the Affordable Health Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, came up is that I thought it would be terrific if we could have, universal health care in this country. I was all for it. I said, it's not complicated. It works. We know it from Medicare. I'm in Medicare. It's a wonderful program. Just start lowering the number of times. Yes, people will have to pay more taxes, and we'll have a simple, easy program to administer. Instead, they came up with this multifaceted thing with heads all over the place, and which nobody to this day understands. You go out on the street and you ask the first 100 people who pass by, what's a health exchange? And they won't have any idea at all. And that is something I think we can attribute to the fact that Obama knew he couldn't get the right thing passed.
The thing about this article that I found, this particular issue of the healthcare health plan costs in New Yorkers for those individuals buying their own going down 50% is, well, why couldn't it be lower before? And I haven't really been able to get my hand around that other than
they mentioned
volume.
No,
yeah, you know,
competition.
There'll be 15 countries, or 15 companies. But it would seem to me that this is something you would have always had that competition, right? You would have always had some level of it of why couldn't it then have been,
But how many of us knew about that? How many of us knew what to do? Look, I'll tell you what we do at WAMC for whatever it's worth. We have a great guy who does this for us. He goes out and surveys the insurance companies, and they come up and they say, here's what it's going to cost you. And we take a look at all of these Blue Cross and this and that, and we take the one which A, fulfills our health care needs, and B, is cheaper. By a little. And every year it changes. So I think there has been some competition, at least on this level. And for the poor guy who is trying to buy individual health care insurance, who doesn't even understand what this whole program is about now, can you imagine what he was thinking before? Take what you can get.
You know, on the exchanges, I think it is they hope for volume, but that's just a hope. Let's see if the volume really materializes.
We're going to take a break. We will be back in just a moment. Again, you can email us roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or tweet us.
Oh, the Ukraine was rising, and the tune was getting low. And a scarce thing we're going to get a little rink till we get to Buffalo. Till we get to Buffalo.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel, and hopefully that put you into a mood to talk about the Erie Canal on our panel this morning. And Judy has a great story in the paper this morning about yachts once again being able to make their way just in time for the opening season.
You don't see so many barns or barges full of barley headed down the old Erie
Canal anymore.
But many people full of rye, oddly enough.
But there are some freight still moving on the canal. But the canal is really trying to develop itself as a recreational waterway. But this summer has been a real bear for it because of all the high water and the flooding. And long stretches of it have been shut down, including the stretch from Amsterdam to Fort Plain, which was scheduled to reopen finally at 8 o'clock this morning. Remember back in late May, there were high waters and tornadoes that shut a big stretch all the way from, I think, Niskayuna down to, out to Fort Frankfort were closed, and boaters got stuck for weeks. And then they thought they would reopen, and then we got another series of flooding, and it closed again. So shutdown after shutdown after shutdown, but now we're back up and operating.
How much money do they generate along that canal corridor?
You know, they don't generate a ton of money from recreational boaters. I'm not even sure it even, I think it's still subsidized by the state thruway authority, but I could be wrong.
No, I believe you're right. And but $5 million in damage.
Right, just this year. And they're still trying to repair the damage from 2011 when Irene and Lee came through and caused $40 million of damage to those movable dams that are at the locks.
What I think is interesting is, as you mentioned in May, but because of the trees and the brush and the debris, this is going just smashing into these movable dam gates, and they can't do anything. So, but what about the poor schnook boater who is there and stuck there for however long?
Right, and apparently the Canal Corp tried to help these guys as much as they could. They would, you know, they checked in with them. They made sure they had taxi rides into town to buy food. Gave them generators.
Get
you know,
ready.
Helped them empty their sewage.
Yeah,
this is so. But it is tough. But I guess the boaters we talked to, Ed Munger, our reporter out there, did a lot of this kind of reporting. You know, boaters tend to be, you know, this is, we're on vacation. We're okay with this kind of thing happens. We'll eventually get through. They were very patient.
So this will hopefully, you know, you knock wood, but hopefully we'll have some normalcy within a weather pattern, and maybe things can, you know, get back to some degree of what used to happen.
You know, it's a beautiful waterway. I was out there just last weekend, and it is gorgeous.
It's stunning. And especially, I said, because of opening day, so many people will, we see an increase because of Saratoga and other tourist destinations throughout the region. But I know in my part of the world, you always see the yachts and the boats. Once opening day at Saratoga starts, man, that place,
really?
You go from a craftsman game fisher to suddenly an $8 million.
Wow.
Judy knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I used to work at a restaurant in Skyleville, which is on the Hudson River, and one of the things we did was we brought people up from the yacht basin to come to the restaurant, and they were very good tippers.
Yes, I bet.
Whoa.
I bet they were.
But with the Erie...
I think it's important. Sure, go ahead.
But with the Erie Canal being shut down for so long, what has happened to a lot of boaters is they've headed north up the Champlain if they want to go to Canada.
Right.
So they've shifted some of the traffic and given the Champlain Canal some good exposure.
You were going to say, Alan?
I was just going to say that it's really incredibly important that all of us, whether we live in New York or Massachusetts or anywhere in our listening area, recognize that the Erie Canal was once the cat's pajamas. I mean, it was the economic gateway to America, and it really did substantially make business possible.
And it still does carry freight. I mean, I see barges with
it does.
Raw material on them.
Well, and you see this with railroads in our region as well as the canals. These are systems that are still used, but are not as vibrant and perhaps as important as they once were, but they still provide a backbone of activity.
And And in fact, Joe, I just wanted to mention that I seem to remember that Rene Montaigne did a thing on this and talked about how it was beginning to carry more barges again. You could look it up on your handy dandy thing there if you wanted to.
So specifically the Erie or all kind of canals?
No, the Erie.
Yep.
And remember that our old friend Brian Stratton, wasn't Brian Stratton the head of it, Judy?
He remains head of the Canal Corp. That's correct.
The head of the Canal Corp. Yeah, great guy. Sam
right.
Stratton's son.
I'm sorry. I'm just looking to something into in my thing.
I'll bet you are.
So, yes. Oh, really?
Yes. This is... I did find commercial shipping was cut. The Erie Canal was cut through upstate New York almost 2 years ago. It opened new shipping routes, lifeline.
Yeah. Compelling.
Yeah, I can't really find
compelling
it.
Radio.
That's good.
I can't find what you're talking
but
about.
Not,
Alan,
but
I
not
apologize.
A lot of barley and rye, and you don't get a lot of people headed to the West anymore. They're not. That's not the route they take when they want to settle the West anymore.
All right,
but could you like take a motorboat, you know, with a 25 horsepower and go up the Erie Canal that way?
Oh yeah, that's what they're doing. That's the thing. That's how people recreate.
You don't have to have a big old yacht, do you?
True. Or you could take a bike and ride along the Erie Canal.
Yeah, the bike trail.
Yeah.
That's right.
And some people do it.
Do you do it?
It'd be a nice challenge.
Yeah.
Well, Judy is quite a athlete, and she does a lot of that walking,
you do the biking and
hiking, and
I like
going
the bike
in the woods.
Along the Erie Canal would be pretty flat. Yeah. I think I could do that.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Good point. All right, let's take on another. So we'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll work on another subject. one that is my what?
No, that's good. That's good. That's good. It's good. We didn't do too well on this one.
Oh, I beg to differ.
Yeah, I think Judy did a fine job.
Oh, Judy was great. The rest of us weren't as good.
The music started off the segment very well.
Yeah, it was very, yeah. All right, yeah. So let's take a break.
That was my work.
There you go. let us take a break, and we will be back after a short break, and we will talk about, Rolling Stone magazine's in trouble. No. We'll talk about this coming up. Get your phone there, Alan, and you can take
not
that call.
Not me. That's probably for Roselle.
Okay. We'll be back after
this
short break.
Support for WMC comes from Piano Summer at New Paltz. 3 weeks of concerts and institute events. Jonathan Biss and Alexander Corsanthia, guest guitarist. Vladimir Feltzman, artistic director. Now through July 26th, newpaltz.edu/piano. Herzog's Design Center, Kingston Plaza. Helping preserve historic homes with historic and new paint colors from Benjamin Moore. Also at Branches Miller Paints, Albany Latham, and Hudson Valley Paints, Fishkill Poughkeepsie. Herzogs.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York. Protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. And Green Arts, presenting Masters on Main Street, a contemporary update on the Hudson River School, on view in Catskill's Main Street storefront windows, opening Saturday, July 20th, 12 to 4. GreenArts.org.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Judy Patrick is here, editor of the Daily Gazette. Ray Graff is here, and Alan Chartok joins us as well. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rolling Stone magazine's decision to put Zhokharov Tsarnaev, the accused Boston Marathon bomber, on the cover of its latest issue has created quite a stir. The cover picture is one that Tsarnaev himself posted online and has been published widely by other media outlets in the past, but many took exception to its prominent play in Rolling Stone, where the space is more often than not reserved for rock stars and celebrities. I think there's several ways to go with this of how to look at it. And one is, I think it's good to point out that, yes, this is an image that has been widely been circulated. I will say, though, that if you were just in the store, in the grocery store, and you looked over and you saw the Rolling Stone masthead and the picture, and you were not of legal age to fully understand the music industry.
Right.
You think it's just another rock star.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a grungy guy with longish hair and a little bit of facial hair, and you think, oh, all right. And then it's not until, you know, as you scroll down and get to the bottom of it, says the bomber. A lot of people say, oh, look, Rolling Stone magazine is glamorizing terrorism. This is some of the things that have appeared on the magazine's Facebook page. I'll not be buying this issue or any future issues. Tasteless, sickening, disgusting are words being used to describe the magazine's decision to put a picture of this man, this accused bomber, on the front cover of a magazine. The other question I would throw out before we take this up as a panel at large, is there a difference between putting a picture, perhaps even this picture, on the front page of the Daily Gazette versus putting it on the front page of Rolling Stone magazine?
Well, what's the piece? Have you read the piece? I mean, is it a journalistic piece?
It is a journalistic piece.
Okay. Is it glamorizing him?
No.
No.
Well, and the headline doesn't glamorize him.
No, it says the bomber.
So, I mean, now granted, I haven't read Rolling Stone since 1982. But I assume if it's they've done journalism before. I don't exactly see what the issue is.
Here's the article, the cover. It says the bomber: how a popular, promising student was failed by his family, fell into a radical Islam, and became a monster. That's the headline that is on the cover of the magazine.
And as summarized, the story includes some really interesting new developments that I hadn't heard before. It sounded like a solid piece of journalism that they did. It was their cover story.
And so what's the problem?
They needed to put a photo, a cover photo, on to promote that.
Well, now Rolling Stone, of course, is a very good magazine. I know it because my kids subscribed to it, and it was always in the bathroom, so I would read it there. And so that's how I got to,
know
the magazine.
Let everyone image. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, but very quickly, you know, while I was shaving.
Right.
But I can tell you that there's a historical context here that I think we should know, and that is every year Time magazine puts out its Man of the Year, right?
Yes. Right.
Do you know that Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin, two of the worst guys in the world, have been the Man of the Year? They were the Man of the Year because they had tremendous influence on what we were thinking and doing as the Nazis almost, took the show. So, I'm not insulted by this. I think they've covered themselves in every way. And I think, frankly, from a journalistic point of view, as Judy just said, it's a good job of journalism. I have a feeling they're going to sell a lot of copies, no matter what a few people said about never reading the magazine again.
Well, so let's go to Ray's point, though, and just talk about it a little. Of what is it, do you think, of putting a picture of this man? And obviously, this hits close to home, but
sure.
What is it about this that says to people, okay, I will never buy your magazine again? At least that's what they're saying now. I'll never buy your magazine again because you've done this.
Hey, what was the song to be on the cover of the Rolling Stone?
It was Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show, 1974.
And that really solidified how important it is to be on the cover of Rolling Stone if you're a rock star.
Sure.
Right.
Wow.
But the reaction of
that's
people,
amazing.
The gut reaction to people... of people to not buy, to deny themselves anything that Rolling Stone produces again. That's just a one-time comment. I think they'll come back to Rolling Stone if they're Rolling Stone readers.
You get it, don't you, Judy? You put a picture on that's controversial on the front page of the Gazette or even internally in the Gazette, and somebody will say, I'll never buy your newspaper again because I don't want to see a dead body or I don't want to see pain.
Right. We need to be sensitive to it. But people who did cancel the paper for one specific reason usually will come back.
Interesting.
Yep.
We are, it is our roundtable panel this morning. I do want to quickly go to some, oddly enough, when I was looking up the other thing, I suddenly got out of, I wanted to go to our letters. We have a few letters about issues that we were talking about earlier, one involving the Erie Canal. Jim wanted us to know that it is his understanding that anyone can kayak through the locks if you wish.
Whoa.
So that is important to know. Also, Jill writes and says, speaking of bike trails, parks and trails, New York has just finished the 8-day, 400-mile bike tour from Buffalo to Albany this past Sunday. 527 cyclists ages 4 to 89. Much of the bike path couldn't be used because of the flooding you spoke of. We had to use alternate roads, but it's still quite an awesome experience. We also got a comment regarding the healthcare discussion earlier. Alan may be right that most people on the street do not know what a healthcare exchange is, but if rates are coming down that much, some of the insurance companies must think that some people are aware of what the exchange is. Also, the arguments or Joe's arguments or devil's advocate points might be similar to arguments used against Social Security in the 1930s. Social Security was reformed and improved, but Obamacare's reforms or improvements are being blocked by Republican obstruction. That from Kenner that we got online, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. In the few moments that we have left, I would like to talk about another story that you are, the other story you were working on, Judy, is?
The CSX train derailment out in Montgomery County. So this happened
June 27th. Transportation, yes.
Yeah, and it's right next to the canal. Two trains collided or sideswiped each other. Didn't collide, sideswiped.
Yep.
47 I think cars all together went off the tracks, four engines, and 20 days later that roadway still closed as the train tracks reopened fairly quickly and train traffic resumed. But they've used the road, Route 5, which is a major east-west thoroughfare out there, to as a staging area to get all those cars off the side of the train tracks. They're hoping that by next week they can get the road up. This is really important because Route 5S on the south side of the Mohawk River is the only other local route back and forth across the county. And when that floods, and it really floods all the time, and it flooded a little bit a couple of weeks ago during that bad storm, there's not an easy way to get back and forth with Route 5 closed. They made some efforts in last week and the week before to reopen the road quickly if there was an emergency. But, man, it's been shut down a long time. We still don't know why those trains hit each other like they did and they fell over.
Are there any theories that are gaining traction as to why it happened?
No, it's even hard for us to gain access to the site to see what happened and what's going on. And I think there.
Why is that?
We can get a certain way, but we're just not welcome there. Sometimes the press is not welcome. We. To take photos while they're doing certain things.
Now, is
things.
This an NTSB investigation?
I think, yes, it is, and the State Department of Transportation is involved as well. CSX Transportation is the company that runs the rail lines. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who will pay for the repairs to the road caused by the derailment and then the repairs they need because they've been having this heavy equipment there lifting freight cars
so
off.
You feel they're stonewalling as far as any information at all? Is this a legal thing just in case there are lawsuits?
No.
The road?
So the attorneys are looking at how the road will be rebuilt and how it will be paid for. But they're answering most of our questions at this point. We would just like to see more of what's happening.
Okay.
I mean, as you said, it's been, mid-June,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, June 27th, and there are places, there are people who live along that stretch. There's one business, it's the Kateri Tika with the National Shrine, and they had their big festival last weekend.
Right.
And people couldn't get to it easily with the road blockage. But the shrine called, and they made arrangements, and so people could get out there. But there are people who live there and people who travel that road. I tried to travel that road this weekend and had to turn around and go back another way. So
You know, how many times have you been on a train and, you know, they pass each other and you could literally touch it for the train that's coming and say, boy, I wonder how come this never happens. Yeah. But how many of us have said, brother, that's really close.
That freaks me out. Yeah, I don't like that. When they're going in the opposite direction, or even worse, when they pass you, you know, and I don't like that. Because I think a train sways a certain bit. And so I figure, now this is where my naivete kicks in.
The country heritage will probably kick in.
Right, where I say, well, I don't know, but I say to myself, oh, well, I'm sure they know what they're doing. I'm sure they know because they obviously, for business purposes, they don't want trains smashing into each other.
Good point.
You got to have faith.
You do have to have a little bit of faith.
You guys remember the children's book in which the kid thinks he hears the train saying to him, I'm going to crash, I'm going to crash, I'm going to crash, crash.
What?
And he tells the conductor, and nobody will believe him. Nobody will believe him. But it turns out, you can get the book. It turns out that he knew what he was talking about.
Read that one to the kids. Sit down, kids. Enjoy.
So the train crashes in the book?
No, it doesn't. He saves it. He finally convinces them. And they stop and they find out there's a loose screw or something like that.
It does promote anxiety in children, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah, I would think so.
Let me put it this way. I'm 72 years old and I'm still thinking about it.
I still remember it. Absolutely. All right. Well, we want to thank. Oh, well, let's see. We have one more letter. I was very disappointed with your glossing over the very partisan nature of the implementation of the Affordable Care Act or sabotage thereof in the various states. While you fell free to take a shot at Nancy Pelosi, no mention was made of the 38 and counting House votes to repeal the law, nor of the many GOP governors who have declined to expand Medicaid to make sure poor people get access to affordable health care. This is from Brian. As the New Paltz area blogger Lance Madison so eloquently put it, and then he goes into a quote, which we
You guys, I don't remember that. I think I spoke somewhat eloquently, if I don't mind saying myself, that the Republicans were in fact trying to sabotage it. Does anybody else remember my saying that?
Or maybe
I'm just imagining
that. You certainly said that before. Yeah, you said it today and you've said it many times before. True.
Yeah,
true.
So what's that about?
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
With that said, we are going to wrap up today's panel. My thanks to Ray Graff and to Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick. Thank you very much, Judy, for coming in. I appreciate it. Always a delight.
You're entirely welcome.
Thank you. Alan, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. I wish I could have contributed more.
Well, we always love when you contribute, and whatever you've contributed
has been
wonderful.
Bad back, you know.
All right. Well, take care of your back, for God's sakes.
I'm going to.
Don't pick up any weeds again.
Oh, yeah.
That was a bad move. Yes.
Yeah, bad move.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. The roundtable continues on WAMC.
East Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.